You're now entering a world where the world's greatest audience builders don't hide their secrets. This is How I Built My Audience with Blake Immel.
Basically, what kind of triggered the whole thing, and it's also like just the biggest thing about Twitter in general, the stuff that you are more purposely putting out is usually not gonna hit as well as something if you're like triggered by something or if you just have a random thought. I find that the best content is that on the fly content because it just feels more genuine because you're just literally like shooting from the hip.
Christina Garnett is here and we're going to be chatting all things Twitter, marketing Twitter, community. It's going to be a blast. And of course, for everyone listening, you're aware of the thread. We will touch on that. And I think Christina's had enough of talking about it, but that's okay.
I'm good.
We're going to hammer it home anyway. All right, cool. Let's start out with this. Before we dive into anything tactical, strategy, whatever, I want to ask you, what's something in your day-to-day life that you have to do constantly, but that you're actually bad at?
That's a really good question. I would say zoning out. I am an INFJ and I crave quiet. But in as a marketer's, like everything we see, there's like video and there's blogs. And so there's always just this like flood of information that comes at you. And so I'm one of those people that I take everything in and then I have to walk away and get to a quiet place and just cut everything off. And so I need to do that every day, but I'm really bad at it. So I wind up meditating in the very beginning. And then if I have a crazy bad day, I have to do it like throughout the day as well. Just something that forces me to disconnect because I can't do it. If I can't like magically disconnect, I have to forcefully take that time.
I'm terrible at that too. We're not the same personality type, but I'm exactly the same way. I definitely am. All right, so let's get into the thick of things here, talking about community. The goal for this episode really is to figure out how to become and actually remain a good leader of a community, which is something that you've done really well. And I want to go to the very roots of it first and your first exposure with community building. So what was the inflection point where you actually started building something for yourself? And not just for another company, but what was the first community you really built?
I would say that when I was starting my career, really trying to determine whether or not I wanted to be a thought leader and what that looked like. I was a teacher in a former life. So that kind of permeates everything I do, whether it's conscious or subconscious. I'm just constantly trying to educate others. And so I worked as a marketing director for a local SBDC. And so much about leveraging, creating marketing materials and really leveraging that as a really powerful resource for people locally was it wasn't they needed to buy into the SBDC. They needed to buy into me as the marketing director, because if they don't believe that I know what I'm talking about, then they're not going to trust me. And therefore, they're also not going to trust what the SBDC can provide. So that was the starting point for that. And then just constantly reading, learning everything that I could, and then deciding how I wanted to educate others in that space. So whether it's social, whether websites, if it's social listening, or if it's like what tools to use and community building, that was like the first point of that. And then the major point was last year where I left an agency, and what I loved about being at the agency was my team, my strategy team. And going into the channels where we would be able to say, here's a conference coming up, here's a blog you should read, here's an update you need to know about, here's a live that's happening. And so when I left, that piece left a huge void in my life. And so I needed to fill that. So I had Twitter fill that. And so I was already on Twitter before last year. I was already talking to people. I already had a pretty decent following. But I really used that in, like, I took all of that energy and I put it directly into Twitter. So the conferences, the people who you need to follow, the news that you need to know, what I wish I knew 5 or 6 years ago, all of that stuff, I was putting all of that energy into Twitter.
And for you, for Twitter, what's your end goal? So what do you actually use it for, hoping that X happens eventually?
For me, I'm selfish about Twitter because it's turned into like my biggest like friend group. So I open my Twitter feed and yes, I get to see what's new and what's updated, but I also get to see my friends and I get to see what they're doing. And I think it's also really nice to be able to be in a space where there's like a stream of consciousness about Twitter that you don't see anywhere else that I really appreciate. And I feel lucky that I can just like do like mental throw up and people will be like, I agree. And I'm like, good. Cause I thought I was the only lunatic that thought that. So it's a really good space. So selfishly, that's where my friends live. Unselfishly, I feel like gatekeeping has really hurt our industry as well as just industries as a whole. I'm very anti-silo. I'm very anti-gatekeeper because I want this industry to be as best as it possibly can. And that doesn't mean that I'm only going to amplify myself. I'm going to amplify the people who have a lot of talent, who have a voice that needs to be heard, because we can all learn from each other. CEOs can learn from their VPs, can learn from their social media person. We all have perspectives and experiences that we can bring to the table. Unselfishly, I want Twitter. My end goal for Twitter is that, especially marketing Twitter, is that we level up our game. And so we all are in a capacity and we all have access to what we need so that we can create the best possible assets, content, messaging, branding, all of it. Mm.
You're one of the few people that does this really well, where you balance yourself in your content with like business thoughts and things like that. So it's, you got to have a niche and everybody's, you got to talk about that stuff and give value, like value. What does that even mean? I don't know. That's a different point, but you do a good job of saying, okay, here's a lot of valuable information, but also here's some stuff about Virginia Tech football. And like yes. you have 15K followers. So I'm sure that maybe 30 of those people like Virginia Tech. I don't know. I'm a BYU fan. So I've been in constant misery for my entire life because they never win anything. But it's just, it's interesting that you can take points like that and actually keep the following, keep growing the following. I'm curious, like, what your mindset is around that. Would you have done that, and did you do that when you were a smaller account? Or do you think that over time you can open yourself up more?
I've always done that. I've always talked about my love of the Foo Fighters. As you can see, they are always, like, watching over me. But I always talk about the things that mean a lot to me. I think on Twitter especially, like, on Instagram, there's that idea of this is your perfect life, and everything's filter. And Facebook saying, this is our happy family. TikTok, this is how messy we are. But on Twitter, it comes to the point where if you spend a lot of time on Twitter, you're going to get really tired of just talking about the same thing. Mm-hmm. You really are. And eventually you're going to get tired, or you're going to get angry, or you're going to be sick. And your personality is going to spill out of you because you just don't have the energy to blockade all the non-marketing stuff. And I'm really particular about... In the beginning, I was a lot more curated about what I would say, and I still curate to a point. I try to not get political, but at the same time, though, there's certain, if I'm going to put something out there, it needs to mean a lot to me. And it's just like, if this is the hill I die on, then like,
yep,
good riddance to me.
Yep.
But I really try to be thoughtful. But I think that as you grow, people like user culture, especially on Twitter or any social media platform, it's really important to think about. And so if you see someone that has 20,000, 30,000, 40,000 followers, and all they do is talk about one specific topic, or they talk about multiple topics, or they show themselves a little bit more, you as a smaller account are more likely to be like, how can I emulate that for success? Or how can I improve my experience by doing something similar? And when I look at the accounts that I enjoy the most, I enjoy the accounts that give me a glimpse of what they're like behind their computer screen. Love marketing. Like, I couldn't shut that part of my brain off if I wanted to. And there are definitely days when I wish I could, but I can't. When I look on Twitter, I love my friends that are there, and I love the fellow marketers that I've connected with. And they're like, so many of them are far more brilliant than I could ever dream of being. But I also don't want to see every single thing they post is about marketing, because I'm like, sweetie, like, what else are you doing?
Yeah.
You don't have to tell me about your family. Like, I understand boundaries, but what do you love? Are you watching a movie tonight? Are you like, and that's the thing about the Peloton rides. It gives us an outlet apart from, I don't want people to feel like they can only be a part of marketing Twitter if they're ready to espouse like tips. If you don't have tips at the ready, you don't get to go in the VIP room. I don't want that to be the experience.
Definitely. Let's talk about marketing Twitter here, because you've become the de facto head of marketing Twitter.
And I'm the godmother.
Yeah. And so I'm sure the adoption papers are already being set up. You've got everything. With marketing Twitter, really, I think probably before this a little bit, but the thread had a lot to do with that. So let's talk about it. Yeah. Let's just get it out of the way now. Why did you post? Okay, first off, what is said in the thread? Because people will know this when you say it, and you've seen it because it has 5 billion comments and likes and stuff on it. And it's everywhere. It's still going a month later. But what was
it? It is still going. So basically, what kind of triggered the whole thing, and it's also like just the biggest thing about Twitter in general. The stuff that you are like more purposely putting out is usually not going to hit as well as something if you're like triggered by something or if you just have a random thought. I find that the best content is that on the fly content because it just feels more genuine because you're just literally like shooting from the hip. So that morning I was looking through my feed and my feed was just filled with my marketing friends. It was just, and anyone that's been on Twitter or social media in general since in 2020, even before that, but especially in 2020, it is such a toxic, hate-filled place. You're doom scrolling, and I'm very much a believer of you consume, like you are what you consume. So we were all just like constantly absorbing the worst of humanity. This is everything bad that's happening. And it's the United States and also the world in general is in such a place that you can't turn away because it's all breaking news. There's just a news update all the time. So we're forcibly having to consume negativity. And over time, we started finding ourselves and collecting these groups. And so by the end of last year, my feed was just nice. It was just all of my friends, people who want to talk about marketing or people who were just being super sarcastic. I love a sass queen. So like my sarcastic people, I'm like, that's my people. Like I will always gravitate towards you. And so it was really nice. So I woke up that morning and not thinking, just like usual, not thinking anything about it, said, I wish other people could feel this because this feels really nice. And this is not the feeling that most people associate with social media. This is not the feed that people are expecting when they are talking about Twitter or another social media channel. So I put that out there and basically said, if you work in the marketing space and you have less than 1,000 followers, because that's usually, as marketers, we love to say that follower count is a vanity metric, but we also hold ourselves more accountable for that metric for our personal brands than we do even our clients.
Yep.
We could work for the Nikes and Walmarts and like P&Gs of the world, but we will still go in there and be like, I only have 300 followers. They're going to think I'm a nobody. I probably shouldn't say anything. And so by going in and offering that under 1,000, it basically says, hey, I know you don't have a lot of followers, but you're still just as wanted as everyone else is in here. Come on in, say hi. Let us know what you do, what you like to talk about or tweet about, and just make friends. And so it just created this really safe space for people who probably, because if you look at it, like half of the responses were, I've been lurking, dot.
Yeah.
Or I don't think I qualify, dot, dot, dot. And it was like, you just needed an invitation. And so I feel blessed that I got to be the person that gave that invitation for them. And then it just blew up.
Do you think that principle of like people, there are people out there waiting and lurking and don't think they're qualified. Mm-hmm. Do you think that principle applies to pretty much every community at this point? Like it's our job as a community leader to make people feel welcome and comfortable. And first off, do you believe that?
Yes.
Okay.
100%.
Good.
It's why inclusivity is so important. Mm.
Definitely.
So just having a community present, it's like with imposter, especially in marketing with imposter syndrome, we self-reject. So if we don't have someone to guide us in and to help us learn the ropes, or we don't have something that specifically states, hey, we want you here, we just automatically assume that if we try to join those conversations that someone's going to rebuff us and be like, what are you doing here? Who are you? And granted, there are those people who would do that. But more often than not, that's not what's going to happen. So by creating this really positive space, be like, no, you're included. Come on in. It changed things. And that's powerful for all communities.
Definitely. How many of those comments have you responded to in that thread?
I try to retweet all of them. I broke Twitter that day and the day after. Twitter kept shutting me off because I was doing too much. So I was like, I had bot energy, I guess. But I tried to retweet all of them because some people continue to go in the feed and find people, but a lot of people didn't. So I was retweeting as people were responding. And as people respond, I try to retweet when I can. I think I've got most of them, but every now and then I try to go in to see if I missed any. Just because there are people who are going to react to them. not because they saw it in the thread, but because they saw my retweet of that. And because of the way that they responded, they're like, oh, I know what this is in response to. Okay, hey, how you doing? And so that creates those conversations and connections.
I'm also curious on the flip side. So you also have a full-time job, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. There are going to be a lot of people, and I do too. So I'm curious. There are a lot of people that are in that same boat that are like, okay, yeah, but how do I actually, if I want to go on Twitter, for example, it's all really public, everything's visible. Mm-hmm. How can I build some kind of audience when maybe I'm self-conscious about my content, or maybe mm-hmm. I'm scared that my employer might not like my content, or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. Like, what's been your mindset around that? Are you ever scared to post anything, or do you just say, you know what, I've chose the right company that I know is going to be okay with who I am?
A little bit of both. There are certain things that you just know is going to get you in trouble. Like, not just from the company, but just we're marketers. It's all about how you frame it. Mm-hmm. So there's certain things. There's definitely some days where God bless my drafts, because I just put things in there and I'm like, I need to say this. I just can't press send. So bless the drafts folder. The drafts folder is where all the good stuff is. No, I think as people on social, you do need to be hyper aware of what you're posting. But you also need to understand like who you work for and if they have a social media policy and what that looks like. And also, picking a company that has a similar culture and value set to you, I think is incredibly important. And I'm glad that with what happened in 2020 and the shift to work from home or to work from home, that the idea of culture has shifted considerably. If you looked a few years ago, it was the ping pong table and the nap center and all that stuff. And like here, it's, I need you to have my back when I have a burnout. Mm-hmm. And I need you to tell me it's okay when there is like major news headlines and I can't sleep at night because I have to get my team ready to man the deck at all time. So things like that. And I think that a lot more companies are starting to realize that there are certain conversations that need to be had, especially politically. The political conversations that we're having now in the past year are very different than the ones that would have been allowed like 5, 10, 15 years ago. But a lot of these conversations need to be had. Like, there's a lot of change that needs to be made. And I firmly believe that as marketers, we hold some responsibility. We know what these tools are like. We know what they're capable of more than anyone else. And so if someone's using those tools for propaganda, or they're using them for hate speech, or they're using it for something else, then as marketers, I find that it is a part of our duty and responsibility to speak to what needs to happen in order for these social platforms to be used for good and not ill. So I think it's a little bit of both. You can't, everyone likes to talk about free speech, but it's freedom of, they don't know what it means. There's no such thing as freedom of consequence. I think you do need to be very clear about like where you stand and what you're willing to talk about and what you're not willing to talk about, and know when you need to curate what you're going to say versus not. I don't like to cuss a lot. I think I've cussed maybe 3 times on Twitter, but it was the stuff that it was just like, how do you not cuss at this moment? Oh, yeah. So I'm not a big swear person. So things like that. But I think it has a lot to do with like picking the company that you work for, knowing that they're going to stand behind you. And also knowing that, like I said, I've posted things, some things, and been like, this means so much to me. If my boss asked me about this, I already know what I would say about this. Like, this matters to me. This needs to be said. And so that's the hill.
Definitely. I love it. I love the conviction, and everybody should be able to, yeah, like you really mentioned, you nailed this. I think it was really interesting how you said, like, there's no freedom of consequence. Sure, you have the ability mm-hmm. to say what you want to say on Twitter, okay, but you don't have the ability mm-hmm. to pick how that's received or what the consequences yeah. are. So ultimately, I think the best policy here, be brave, be bold, but also be kind. If you can somehow manage to melt those things together, you'll probably do okay, and most people will understand. And if not, maybe it's time to look for a different employer or something. I don't know. But yeah, definitely the culture fit.
I think it also comes down to what you want to use social for. I'm very much a fan of using social for good. Mm-hmm. So when I get sarcastic and stuff like that, like most people do, but I want my feed to provide more than less. I want it to help more than it hurts. And so when people follow me or they see my content, I want them to be able to be like, I needed to see that today, or that helps me, or that connects me to someone else that would help me. I think that if we all came from a place of, we can all have different opinions, but I'm going to come from a place of, I want to use social to make the world better, not worse. Even if we have opposing sides, like, you can even have discussions on Twitter and you can disagree with people. Like, I disagree with people all the time. You just do it from a place of respect. Just if we just all treated each other like humans on there and thought, like, how can I use my social presence to make things better, not worse? I think that all social platforms would be significantly better off.
I definitely agree with that for sure. And I'm part of marketing Twitter more so. I've put a tweet out about this before, but there's the marketing Twitter side. There's money Twitter, which I'm sure you're aware of, money Twitter.
Yes.
So money Twitter gets good engagement and they sell courses and all that stuff. And there are some good people over there. But
I don't hustle enough for money Twitter.
One thing that bothers me, though, is this idea of stirring up controversy just for the engagement. If you're going to do something for the engagement, you might as well, in my opinion, do something fun. At the very least, like, if it's an engagement play, which sometimes it is, at least make it more uplifting than not just telling people how terrible they are or how X group of people is better than whatever. And like, that stuff bothers me, the controversy just for controversy and engagement's sake. But ultimately, what you're saying here, what's really resonating with me is that there are different ways to do this Twitter thing, to build this community, to do that thing. Ultimately, it boils down to what works for you, and can you be consistent at it, and can you help other people? There's this notion out there that, like, no, you got to write long threads, you got to create a course, you got to do all this stuff. You know what? you can do well on Twitter doing those things. You can also do really well if you just lift people up. For example, when we say, the word value, coming back to that, like, value doesn't mean only a bulleted list of everything that you need to do to accomplish X goal. Sometimes value can just be Christina saying, hey, how are you today? And that's enough.
Well, I think it's very interesting. There's definitely different ways to do things. You can do it by amplifying others, doing threads, doing courses. The thing is that social is such an inherently human place. And there's always that joke that there's no guide to life, and yet we all go on Twitter and try to write a guide for this most human platform. And it just doesn't make sense. You can make best practices, but at the end of the day, I find that it's just, if you go in with purpose and you're like, this is what I want to do, this is what I want to accomplish, that's fantastic. I would argue that every single tweet is an engagement play, though. It's just some are more successful than others. Right. Because ideally, your goal for putting anything out there, whether it's a survey, whether it's a tweet, whether it's just a GIF, whether it's a thread, whether it's a blog link, like, whatever you're pushing, the goal is to get engagement. So even the ones where this is an engagement hack, this is a growth hack, and you're like, all of it's a growth hack. The whole purpose of being here is that some other human is going to respond to what you just put. So you could argue that it's all a move, like, all of it, like, the goal for everything is that. And some are just more spammy than others. That's the difference for me.
For sure. No, that's super interesting. We could go on for a million years about this stuff. Like, I can't turn the marketing part of my brain off either. I'm totally the same. But I'm just going to hard stop us here because I'll just keep going on forever. So I want to give you a chance, a platform right now, to just talk about anything in the world that you're working on right now, anything that's important to you, and where people can find you online.
Absolutely. So I am That Christina G on Twitter, Instagram. You can find me on LinkedIn and Facebook. I do a lot of writing on Medium. And one of the things that's really near and dear to me is I have a Medium publication called In the Trenches, and it's specifically for practitioners in marketing that maybe haven't had the chance to be published in, like, a Forbes or an Inc. or in other publications, but they still have such valuable insight to share. And so it gives them another opportunity to have their voices heard. So if there's anyone watching or listening that wants to be a part of that, feel free to check it out on Medium. It's called In the Trenches. And I'd love to see if we can get some more writers for it.
Awesome. Let's do that. All right. Thanks so much, Christina, for coming on. It's been a pleasure, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to How I Built My Audience. If you found something noteworthy or interesting in this episode, Remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And hey, share it with a friend.